Hello and welcome to Unabashed Book Snobbery, the podcast where we gush about George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire and complain about its universally reviled adaptation, Game of Thrones.
This is where being a book snob is a good thing. I mean, people still don't care about the book, so, you know, I guess that's still accurate.
Kylie, and here with me is Julia.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi. The two of us write for thefundamentals.com. It's that website for fundamentally sound fandom analysis. And if you're wondering what that means, I suggest navigating to it. It's like geeky shit, right?
Yeah. Magazine-style geeky shit.
If you enjoy said style geeky shit, you might want to consider supporting us. For $3 a month or $30 a year, you could become a Fundamentals Plus subscriber. Plus Ultra! just go to the main site. There's an FM Plus button and you can sign right up, and that will give you access to some gated content, which is more just like exclusive podcasts or hangouts with me and Julia to hear us do more of this for some reason.
More or less, yeah.
Store discounts. I need to update the store with some of our, like, I just wanted those elephants.
Yes.
That needs to be in the store. Either way, that money goes a really, really long way. Check us out. And you also will find other podcasts there besides Unabashed Book Snobbery, for those of you who are fans of pods.
Yes, we have many pods.
So this pod in particular, this episode, we didn't plan a whole lot. We kind of are just taking this to debrief from season 8 of Game of Thrones, and any new listeners or listeners who just came on for the last few episodes, Julia and myself have been critical of Game of Thrones for quite some time.
Since season 5, officially. That's when we started writing about it, yeah.
That's when we started writing and posting on social media about it, and this podcast came as a result of some of our analysis of season 5.
Yeah.
At first, I think we were just like trying to read through our essays in a little more of a conversational way. Mm-hmm. And then it morphed.
I don't know. Like at some point, it just became like meme-tastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and now we have like a lot of in-jokes and things. And just, it's kind of a mess.
It's taken on a life of its
own. Yeah.
But what we're doing today, season 8 was a really weird journey because for the past 3 years, you know, Julia and I really liked the analysis we did, but at the same time, we felt a little bit like we were standing on a street corner talking about our precious bodily fluids.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Emmys were just getting chucked at the show. Everyone loved it.
People were writing books about the feminism in it.
Oh, my God. I remember I bought one of those, and or my brother bought me one. I can't quite recall, but I can't imagine
you like paid money for it, Kylie.
Yeah. And I tried to analyze it to be like, what point did they have? And it was just conflation.
Yeah.
It was conflation goggles with the books. So not shocking. However, season 8, Julia, what happened with the critical response?
All of a sudden the critics were like agreeing with us and like saying things that we've been saying for years. Like all these things are happening off screen that we really need to see, for example. And isn't this a little sexist? And wow, Jon Snow's really dumb, isn't he?
And this seems like an empty moment. You know, we're told it's significant, but we're not shown why it's significant. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, that sounds exactly like how we describe season 5.
And there is this guy on, like, YouTube, like, back in the day, like, back when Red Letter Media was watchable, named Confused Matthew. And he did prequel reviews of the Star Wars prequels. And then he reviewed the Clone Wars movie, like, the animated movie.
Yeah.
And he, like, was talking about how the critics panned it. And he was just like, I don't understand. This is just as bad as the prequels. It's not worse than the prequels. It's just as bad. And that's how I feel about season 8. Like, nothing in season 8 was unprecedented or new in any way.
Yeah, like, we're definitely not here to judge anyone who liked some the of the past seasons. I mean, well, I'm just not going to agree with you on it. Mm-hmm. But what is confusing to me is that if you are a viewer who liked season six and season seven, mm-hmm. I don't see anything that would have separated your viewing experience so markedly this year. I just don't.
I mean, like, you can see that, like, the pace kind of picked up, like, the punctuated pace? Equilibrium pace.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
the
yeah.
off-screen zone, skipping the middle kind of pace. Like, I guess that was a little bit worse, but, like...
It's very condensed, because yeah. season six...
I mean, I don't think that the build-up to the Battle of King's Landing was less staccatic than the build-up for the Battle of the Bastards.
I think the trouble is, Julia, you and I are very used to watching things as one plot line. So, like, for instance, we just watched the Winterfell theater building up in season six, and we can tell you the Battle of the Bastards, mm-hmm. canonically inverse named Battle of the Bastards.
Well, Hot Pie came up with that name.
Had as much build up, mm-hmm. if not possibly less than King's Landing in season eight.
And as much, like, kind of character-driven motivation behind it.
And as much randomness. Mm-hmm. Really, there's just one episode, they're tromping around everywhere, and then Jon goes, "We fight with the army we have." And that's it. They fight with the army they have.
The, like, music wants us to think that this rivalry with Ramsay is super significant, but, like, it's not.
He wrote him a letter once.
Yeah.
That's their interaction. I think... having it condensed down and really cutting out that fat, because the fat is like where they kind of pretended things were significant, but mm-hmm. it's also where they got lost in corn mazes during season five and six. So I don't know.
Like the way that you said, like, maybe it's the extra long episodes that kind of screwed them over, because like if the episode ended, for example, when Rhaegal was shot, and then the next week, mm-hmm. the rest of the episode was a whole other episode. Like, would the reaction have been as bad?
I agree with that. And especially, too, if there had been four episodes before the Night's King died, rather than just at the end of the third, would have helped. And one thing I can't figure out, you know, they're so desperate to have only six episodes this season. You're really telling me there couldn't have been seven or eight with this extra, extra long runtime?
Yeah, it was really like a matter of editing that there was six rather than seven or eight.
Yeah, but not like, that I would have, like, wanted more season. Yeah, weeks just, going on.
Like, these things are complicated, obviously, in terms of like logistics and just weird technicalities. But like, I really don't see why it had to be a six episode rather than an eight episode season.
And then again, I didn't see why season six needed to be 10 episodes. So yeah. It cuts both ways. Mm-hmm. I think honestly, the thing that Julia and I have maybe noticed, and please disagree with me if I'm misstating it in any way, is
how
that...
How dare you speak for me?
After rewatching so much of the show, it is so fundamentally lazy at its core in terms of how D&D go about scripting things.
At least in season four, yeah.
Yeah, how base level the motivations mm-hmm. are, and just, we want to get to shock point B. Point A is going to be this, which will be indicating the opposite thing.
Yeah.
And there's going to be some fodder connecting it in the middle. Possibly.
Sometimes.
Not always.
If they have time, because they have to, like, you know, show Tyrion walking across an empty room for 30 seconds. So they might not have time.
This just so feels like a show that ran out of steam mm-hmm. and the creators wanted to be done with it. And that's how it's come across in interviews since after the Red Wedding, to mm-hmm. be honest.
I mean, I think they never really got over, like, pacing-wise, they never really got over splitting A Storm of Swords into two seasons.
How do you mean?
Just that, like, there are kind of ripple effects from that. Like, the way that it paced the Wall plotline in season four, for example.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, completely screwed up season five at the Wall, which just had an indelible effect on Jon's character.
And part of the pacing also was their determination on having these big battles that they like filming. And then, look, Watchers on the Wall is gorgeous to watch if you like watching that.
Yeah. I mean, like, we've never had a single complaint about the acting. The, no. you know,
well.
The... Well, yeah, most of the time. we never had a much complaint about the acting. We've never had a complaint about the work of, like, the craftspeople involved. Like, the people doing the computer animating. Like, the costume people, we've had some... But that's kind of a whole thing. Like, their work is beautiful. It's just kind of the thoughts behind it that somehow makes us laugh. Like, the guys making the armor, we have no complaints about them.
Even if they're not putting leather on it.
Apparently that's not a thing.
No, that's not.
I don't know.
It's just a thing that D&D wrote to make it sound like a thing. I will say, though, not complaining about the acting with two notable exceptions, I don't think we've ever been wooed with Kit Harington, ever.
No.
And until this year, honestly, I didn't know what was driving Emilius Clarke deadpan, because...
Yeah, I think the consensus in UBS land is that it was the directing the whole time.
100%, especially watching season 8. But yeah. What is she live pan this year? Is that
yeah, I think that's what we decided. We're going to call her live pan.
But live pan?
Like, I know, it just kind of goes with the whole thing that, like, any show of emotion in a woman means that they must be insane.
Oh, so, poor Emilia Clarke. She pulled it off. But.
She really, like, yeah, I've never been impressed by her work in anything, really. But, no, just
she was
like...
fine as Kira. She was the most fine in that role, like, as anything.
That role was kind of nothing.
Yeah, but it was among the most fine of that horrible movie, so...
Yeah, I suppose. But, like, the way that she, like, actually was able to take the dreck she was given in season 8 seriously enough to pull it off is just a testament to her professionalism. And I salute it.
It also makes me a little mad because Lee Nahidi is one of the people who I think has been really phenomenal from the start, and she was just fundamentally wasted this year. Well, absolutely.
Except for the part with the elephants. That was brilliant.
Oh, yeah. She just wanted those elephants.
I mean, you could, like, feel how much disappointment there was in her soul because she didn't have elephants.
It was just really, really weird to see critics saying the same things we've been saying.
We're getting really hipstery, and we apologize for that.
I know, but that's the experience of watching season 8, and honestly, it's just, here we are now. what's forward for us, Julia? In fact, why are we still here?
Well, it's been our tradition to always reflect on the season that has passed in the form of a series of retrospectives based on plot lines, like rewatching a plot line as a complete and separate entity and just writing about it and podcasting about it. So I don't see any reason why we shouldn't do that for season 8.
Yeah.
And there is some fun stuff we want to do, like the Carol Awards, another tradition here where it's basically an award show for things that have happened in this past season. Like, categories include Saint Tyrion's most devoted fan, most meta line, best prop. I like that one.
I think one of my favorite things about Tyrion this year is how much they were like, Varys is his best friend. He's so sad about losing his bestie. Okay.
I mean, he was the president of his fan club. I think he won that award, the bestest fan of Saint Tyrion, 3 years in a row,
I think. Jorah might run away with it this year, though.
I'm not sure about that. I think the writers might run away with it this year.
Well, that would have been every year.
Well,
Jorah.
Yeah, but... So I think it's a little especially egregious this year.
Yeah, so, I mean, part of the reason I think that it's also worth asking what we're still doing here is that the reason we were keeping on with the hate watching or whatever you want to call it and going into this much detail is because we really didn't feel there was a critical counterbalance.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't.
I mean, like, at this point, like, if we're talking about mainstream critics, they've all already forgotten about this fucking show.
Yeah. And there's going to be people with, like, large platforms and influence who are going to be doing deep dives. I know Lindsay Ellis, for instance, has a video planned, like, the end of June or something like that. And, you
but
know,
like, even that, I think that's probably going to be a one-time thing, and then she will forget about it. Like,
I think
is one of the predictions that we made before season 8, that, like, this will be, like, a flash in the pan pop culture phenomenon. It'll be, like, Lost. Like, nobody talks about Lost. Or Avatar. Remember how Avatar was so fucking huge that, like...
They still have, like, 5 sequels planned for it or whatever.
I don't know, but, like... So, like, I don't think that in terms of, like, us being replaced by the man, I don't really think that's a concern.
Well, It's also that I do think there's a value in seeing this out with the retrospectives and how we've approached that with updating a sexism in season 8 piece in line with the 3 series I've done. I'm curious about this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Benioff and Weiss, as of right now, are on deck for the next Star Wars film. So these guys are not going anywhere.
I mean, we were hopeful that this would get them fired, but apparently not.
No, it just got them a lot of hate mail. Yeah. But no, I mean,
but like, if you didn't bother to like see the precipitous slide of their like Rotten Tomatoes ratings and things like that, it was remarkable. Like,
yeah,
as soon as the Night King's dead, everyone started hating the show.
Well, I actually think it was the episode after. People were kind of stunned at that, but like didn't know how to react, and they're like, okay. But it was really the episode after it began to slide a lot. So Long Night still at a 74% on Rotten Tomatoes.
74% was like the lowest they ever had.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Already.
Last of the Starks was 58%. Mm. The Bells was 48%. The Iron Throne was 49%. IMDb, it ended up the last episode was like a 4.3 out of 10.
Mm.
The one bit of satisfaction, and by the way, season 8 overall had a 52% critic view score, which isn't good. And a 34% audience score.
Oh,
which
my
is like
God.
Atrocious.
Yeah, that's like bad romantic comedy starring Kate Hudson level.
Yeah, it's really, really bad. Actually, I think the Emoji Movie is around that level.
I never watched the Emoji Movie.
It wasn't that bad. It was not good, but it wasn't that bad.
Like season 8.
I actually think there's more to the Emoji Movie than there was to season 8. If I'm being honest, which I rewatched on Halloween, and the spooky part was that I dumped water onto my laptop and fried it.
Oh no, that sucks, man.
It's fine. I've got a nice PC I mean, now. But.
So we did a post episode podcast about every single episode in season 8.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure how much we have to add specifically to what we said there.
No, I mean we don't.
Yeah.
I think what we can do is just go through the many asks that have come up. These are all pulled from my Tumblr blog. If you don't follow me, I am GOT Gifts and Musings. And if you did ask me something that I don't answer either in this podcast or haven't answered yet, I have over 10,000 messages in my inbox.
You're supposed to say over 9,000, which would still be accurate.
Over 9,000. Yeah, but, okay. I mean, I do honestly read every single one of them, and then in my brain answer every single one of them. Yeah. It's just what I can translate to actually getting through. So let's go through this. And unless otherwise specified, these were all anonymous in submission. So the first that I thought was pretty easy to tackle is just, will there be an Unabashed Book Snobbery Checklist or Ask Poll podcast? We talked about it in the finale cast. I'm interested in what parts you guys think are George R. R. Martin's. Like, we could either do this as its own episode. Mm-hmm. My inclination was to do it more as a live stream.
Yeah.
Or a hangout, rather, for Phantom Menace Plusers. And then it's probably going to be an inherent part of our retrospective podcasts.
I don't think there's much insight to be gleaned from that, but it might be fun.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just worth it to talk through, I think. Elio Garcia and Linda, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting her last name.
Oh, I have their book. Linda Antonsen.
Right, of Westeros.org actually did a video almost identical in nature. They didn't call it Aspel or Checklist because they're like professional.
Yeah, I mean, they did call her Carol a couple times. Not in that video, but in the past. Yeah,
yeah, because that's sort of the boards. They love that. Or Linda does, at least. I think Elio kind of is like, okay, fine. But they actually did a video where they do talk about the end game and what they think of it in the context of George's. Or George R. R. Martin's. I'm sorry, they call him George.
Well, they can call him George. They know him.
He like actually is their buddy George.
Yeah.
So I would recommend that video first if you are really looking for those kind of thoughts. Mm-hmm. And then we certainly will probably do a hangout, probably incorporate it with our retrospectives. Another question about our future is, will we do any more Song of Ice and Fire focused podcasts in the near future?
Right under these notes in this very Google Doc that we're using are our notes for our Tyrion reread. So, yes.
Yep. And then after we finish him, I don't know, a Danny reread maybe? Like,
I mean, it does seem like it's the right moment to think about that character.
And truthfully, this show made me realize I have some amount of concern for this character more than I thought I did.
Yeah, well, like, I kind of feel like she must be protected at all costs all of a sudden. Yeah, it's weird.
Another question is if we would do a retrospective to examine how badly the show butchered John's character. I mean, we're going to do a retrospective on his arc.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to do a John reread at any point?
I mean, I'm not against it. Especially not in A Dance with Dragons.
Especially if we do Danny, because those two parallel each other almost perfectly in that book.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I wonder the significance of that could be.
It's almost like Martin split up the POVs kind of intentionally. So pretty much anything is on the table for A Song of Ice and Fire related content. However, it should be noted that George R. R. Martin had a blog post in which he said if he's not done writing Winds of Winter by next summer, then...
And we're allowed to, like, lock him in a room until he does or something, right?
Is that what you said? It was, like, exile him to a, like, island with...
Nothing but a typewriter.
Radioactive water or something. It was something very extreme.
Yeah.
But to me, that's a high level of confidence that we haven't heard from him in a while. I don't want to predict on a timeline, but Winds of Winter might come out. And if it does, Julie and I will have to figure out how we're doing.
I'll have so many stress poops.
Oh my god.
Just like, I'm going to see like Arianne's name and, as the title of the chapter and like have to go barf. It's going to be so stressful.
She really might be on the chopping block this book too. I just don't want to deal with it.
No, I don't want to deal with it, but I want that book so badly. I'm so conflicted.
So another question we had, Julia.
Yes?
Any idea what's happening with the wedding in Sunspear?
First of all, it's a wedding in Sunspear.
Well, I think it's a pretty specific one they're referring to. For anybody who doesn't know, this is Julia's fan fiction that she writes on archiveofourown.org. Yeah. It's called A Wedding in Sunspear, and it is fantastic. It is a pre-canon, canon-compliant
so
for
far.
Now.
Yeah, God. That makes me stressed out, too.
So, Doran, Oberyn, and Elia had a mother.
Yes, she doesn't have a name in canon.
Named Mama Martell.
All that we know about her is that she was buddies with Joanna Lannister, and once she took her kids to Casterly Rock, more or less.
There's
like one anecdote about her in The World of Ice and Fire about how like Aerys went to her house once and like told like really embarrassing drunk stories about how he was gonna like build canals to make the desert bloom or something. But yeah, that's like all the canonical material we have about her.
So it's obviously about her wedding.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. It's delightful. Check it out. You've got a point of view character from Olenna.
Yes.
You guys know and like Olenna. There's also point of views from, Jeremy, who is the boyfriend of Darren.
Yes, he's canonical.
He is canonical. Are there any other canonical POVs?
Huh?
Are there any other canonical POVs?
I don't think so.
Oh, Ormond.
Yeah, I guess he's canonical. He's Ormond a name. Ironwood. He's a name on a family tree. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So what is happening with it, Julia?
I think about it every day. I don't have much time to write it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of like George R. R. Martin.
I'm just going to let that one sit there. No, I was taking a drink of water. It is very Martin-esque. It's Martin meets Austin. That's how I've always described this. Go check it out.
Well, every time I reread like back chapters, all I can think about is how much I want to revise it. So we'll see.
You could also listen to our podcast in this feed called Embarrass Your Favorite Canadian, which is all about that podcast.
That was all about us trying to forget about the fact that Trump was just elected president, which gives you like a timeline as to how long I've been fucking writing this thing, and I'm still not half done. So
that was a personal ask about you. A personal ask about me is, can we get a Tristain update? So Tristain is my polydactyl tabby cat. His Tristain Nimeros Martell. And he's good. He moved to Chicago when I did, like a year ago. I had to take him on a plane and he pooped in his carrier. He's just, there's not much update on. He's a really chill cat. I mean, he's fine. He was scared of the window washers today. It's fine.
Sometimes he walks across your like keyboard.
He does. And that has gotten worse lately because I put his cat bed on my desk, but he's so happy being near me. So He's a good boy.
Okay, so this made me laugh. Shitting Gold pointed out, asked something. A child with no interest in governing on the throne, puppeted in truth by a Lannister who spends all their time drinking and talking about how awesome they are, while actually screwing everything up. A small council brimming with corruption and nepotism, a woefully underqualified master of coin, a criminal as master of ships, a grand maester with no respect for his vows. Am I talking about the show, or do D&D realize they actually ended it with Tyrion and Cersei's Feast for Crows plotline?
That's amazing. Like, every facet of that is amazing. The whole Bran doesn't want the throne.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't really want anymore, so that's what makes him a good ruler.
He did check in on the meeting before he left.
Yeah, he showed up for like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're just all sitting in a room joking about brothels as it cuts away. And it's like, this is supposed to be the "and they ruled wisely for many years" scene? Like, are you kidding me?
I mean, the last bit of dialogue in the show was, "I once took a honeycomb and a donkey into a brothel." Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they ended as they began, I guess. I don't know.
Taking honeycombs into brothels, yeah.
And donkeys.
No, I mean, that's absolutely amazing. I will push back slightly. Davos is somewhat qualified for his position.
Yeah, he was more qualified than the hot guy that Cersei picked.
He's more qualified than Bronn.
Well, yes, that is true.
But, well, right, I forgot that Cersei just picked the guy that looked kind of Targ-esque, right?
Yeah, and she was just like, I don't like his beard. I wonder if I sleep with him, he'll shave off his beard.
Oh my god, I love Cersei. Yeah, no. Tyrion, oh god. He just doesn't. Part of the thing of him being named Hand is like, oh, I've made all these mistakes and I'm bad at this.
Yeah.
And Bran's like, exactly. You have to prove yourself and fix your debt to society, basically. You were so bad as a Hand before that you have to make it up now.
I mean, like, I don't think that D&D agree with Tyrion's, like, self-deprecation. So, who knows?
How can they not, though?
I mean, it's all, like, you know, Daenerys' fault. She was a crazy person. So, what was he supposed to do? They had this, insane burner of things he had to deal with.
So here's one that I thought was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a few times now, folks new to being show detractors, that season 8, and to some extent season 7, were bad because they were too short. And we were kind of just talking about this. I've been on the hate wagon since season 5, and my response is, I disagree, but I can't articulate why. Do you have a comment to this? You talked about how much time season 6 wasted, and you might agree too little time wasn't the biggest problem. And we did just kind of talk about this, but I just wanted a minute to reflect on the amount of wasted time of season 6.
Okay.
Because that was the season where, like, we had the warm milk episode that didn't have anything happen at all.
Which one was that specifically?
Or is that season 5 that had Kill the Boy?
Yeah, Kill the Boy.
Yeah. Kill the Boy was the one that really did move. But season 6, I think that it also had one. It was like, God, it must have been a Cogman one or something. Like, episode 5, maybe, of that. Right before Blood of My Blood, when, like, everything happened. And it was building up to that. But Dany had already been gone.
I don't know.
The door.
But, like, all that Hodor stuff happened in the door. Everybody loved that.
What did that amount to?
Nothing. But did anything amount to anything on this show is my question.
Nothing isn't better or worse than anything. No, I mean, our response is pretty much what we said. I think the truncated timeline punctuated a lot of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But time and time again, Game of Thrones has proven that with the most minimal amount of scrutiny, it doesn't hold up. Yeah. So, kind of a tangentially related to that is the ask, do you think people gave seasons 5 through 7 a pass because we have to see where it goes? Maybe it will make sense in the end.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Again, like, the same thing happened with Lost.
But the reviews seem genuinely earnest in season 7. Like, remember Beyond the Wall, mm-hmm. Lost everyone? And then Dragon and the Wolf came and everyone was like, what an amazing show!
I mean, that happened more than once. The whole, like, they lost everyone for one episode. And then, like, remember, I think it was first About a Button Broken lost everyone. And then Hard Home was right next.
Yeah.
And that's, like, when we came up with that meme of, like, keys dangling in front of Kanye West.
Yeah. Well, Hard Home was two after that.
Yeah.
Because The Gift came.
Oh, my God.
In between. Because The Gift actually wasn't reviewed all that well because it was over Memorial Day. So there just wasn't as much conversation about it. And then Hard Home was after that and everyone was like, a best show ever.
Yeah, but like season 7 has that infamous pit meeting, which for one of our retrospectives, we actually like timed with a stopwatch. And there was like literal like 30 second periods with like just people walking in silence across space.
Yeah, so even the truncated season, they were killing time.
And that was an extra long episode, and it had to be extra long because they just had so much to do. So
yeah. To me, season 6 wasted the most time, though, especially because all the character arcs were rehashes. Yeah. Like, all of them.
That was a great season 6 discovery, that, like, everybody's character arc was exactly the same as their character arc in season 5. It was beautiful.
Oh, hey, that's thunder. What was our season 7 discovery? That maybe it really is just sexism?
Yeah, I think that was, like, we had that whole conversation about, like, what D&D think an ideal ruler is, and we kind of realized
it was just a man.
Yeah.
So related to what we were just talking about, what are your top 5 worst episodes? Bottom 5 worst episodes?
At this point, they're all really bleeding into each other, aren't they?
I think we need to separate out, like, truly awful, but we find it funny, from just truly awful.
Yeah, because there's kind of, like, first there was... Sons of the Harpy, which holds a special place in our heart.
Oh my god, but that's so funny.
Yeah. And Blood of My Blood is, like, exactly the same category.
Eastwatch I would put in that category as well, too.
Really? I would put Eastwatch in the Genuinely Bad.
What?
I would put Eastwatch in the Genuinely Bad.
I mean, it's also that, but it has the fermented crab meat and, like...
Oh my god, the fermented crab. A lot did happen that episode, like, way too much.
Yeah. It wasn't quite the slow clap anecdote yet. I think that was Beyond the Wall. But it was, like, starting to ramp all that up when Arya's like, why aren't you cutting off people's faces? Or, like, cutting off their heads.
Yeah.
And so it's just like,
I just patiently explained to you how I need their military support.
Eastwatch also began with Larry and Bronn just emerging. Or, I'm sorry, Jaime and Bronn just emerging from that pond.
No. We're not going to stop calling him Larry just because we might have a few more new people.
Well, to the new people, we have a series of nicknames for the show characters because they are so divorced of their book characters. Yeah. And we normally don't use them in podcasts other than Larry and Carol or Cheryl, who are Jamie and Cersei.
Yeah.
And there's a glossary that you can look up. The book's not glossary. I mean,
like, Larry is so Larry. It's just the name suits him so perfectly.
Oh, Larry.
Like, I will give up Cheryl and Carol before I give up Larry.
Hey, let's talk about Larry for a minute.
Let's.
Any chance that in Martin's outline, Jaime kills Cersei, but D&D changed it because they're afraid of the backlash they had within a couple of episodes, two main male characters put down two female characters, gone insane and homicidal? I mean, I'm sure that in Martin's book, Dany Zark will be less cringeworthy, but at this point, evil Dany seems like a possibility in the books, and Jaime killing Cersei has been heavily foreshadowed.
Yeah, I agree with all that.
Yeah, I mean, I actually disagree slightly.
Yeah.
Just tonally, I don't think it's going to be evil Dany.
I don't think so. I think,
she's not going to do her evil. She doesn't have evil intentions. I think she's ruthless.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to make decisions that perhaps others would not make. But yeah. I'm going...
Or decisions that she doesn't foresee the consequences of.
I'm going for a Rhaenyra 2.0, not...
Yeah. The not being perfect combined with sexism leads to her doom, basically.
Hey, speaking of rehashes.
But do you want to talk about the whole Valonqar thing a little bit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've always thought that Jaime would be the one to kill Cersei. And what makes it, you know, poetic is that she convinced herself it was Tyrion, but it's not. It's him. And she's done this through isolating him through various ways.
That was in the show, right? She went to a witch, but they didn't, like...
They didn't include the Valonqar part of it.
They didn't include the Valonqar part of it. They just included the part with the younger, more beautiful queen.
Which happened that season. It was Margaery, and she was hot.
Yeah, and it's not at all clear in the books that it is referring to Margaery. I mean, it's probably not referring to anyone, and it's all kind of, like, you know, in Cersei's brain, and she's making things happen because she's paranoid.
It's Fagon.
He's the younger, more beautiful queen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if Old Valyrian doesn't have gendered nouns, sure, why not? But the second part of the prophecy is, like, the younger brother will choke her to death, basically. And she always thought it was Tyrion because, like, she hates him. But there it's heavily, heavily implied that it will be Jaime.
Well, and she just can't see that Jaime would ever do that. Yeah.
Because she only sees Jaime as an extension of herself.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely... Mm. I have a feeling Cersei in the books is not living nearly as long as Cheryl has on the show. To become Carol again. Good for her. I don't think those moments would be so close together, and I think it would have been pretty upsetting to see them back to back.
Yeah.
At the same time, they dropped Valonqar. Maybe they already planned this.
I mean, it wouldn't be the worst decision they've ever made, to tell you the truth.
Well, especially this is Larry's character, right?
Yeah, he's like, Larry would never do that.
He lived as he died, loving his queen. Which Brienne wrote about in the White Book.
Oh, dear. Let's move on.
No. Okay, you pick one then.
How about the one you're highlighting?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Go for it.
So, season 8 was just season 5 again, and over-the-top villain Sue deals an implausible military defeat to a morally gray character, who then goes completely and unfortunately evil, and does something horrible that doesn't actually accomplish anything, and then gets killed in an anticlimactic way.
Is this about Stannis? I think this is about Stannis.
Yeah, it's about Stannis. It must be, because he goes completely evil randomly, I guess.
I wouldn't say Stannis was nearly as central to this narrative as Dany was, but it's definitely not a dissimilar moment. I mean, because that was with the 20 good men who, torched the tents.
And he randomly burned his daughter the way that she randomly burned King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an apt comparison, I guess.
I think what's worse about this one, though, because, like,
Stannis was never, like, a good guy. He was never...
Well, not on the show, no. He wasn't even morally gray. He was honestly just kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, if you go back and rewatch, there's nothing to this character. I understand book projections for sure.
Yeah. We did a rewatch. Did we talk about that?
Yeah, we were just like, why? Every single time Stannis came up, we're like, why would anyone root for this guy? Why would anyone root for this guy? And then stayed the case through all 4 seasons that we rewatched.
Yeah.
Season 5, I don't think anything markedly changed. Wasn't he... What was it? With Mance. He was just, like, randomly going to execute him because he had King's blood rather than the fact that he was a deserter? It was something like that.
No, he was randomly going to execute him because he wouldn't kneel. I don't think King's blood was a factor. Like, they mentioned the King's blood so they can foreshadow Shireen, I think.
Oh,
but I don't think
that
was a factor in his burning Mance radar.
Yeah, no, it's just he wouldn't kneel, so he got mad. He didn't even mention the deserter thing.
Yeah.
Oh, Stannis.
And Stannis. Mance Rayder was executed because he deserted the Night's Watch, which makes sense.
What I was going to say, too, is that the military logistics, like, 20 good men was absurd.
Yes.
It was absolutely absurd. But what was dumber about season 8 is that, first, Cersei has her stunning military victory, and she shoots down Rhaegal and, like, blows up the fleet, and basically at the end of The Last of the Starks, it's like Dany and 3 people standing outside of King's Landing. And then the next episode, it's not even close.
Yeah, I mean, they spent 2 seasons building up Cersei as a military threat, and it was just the giant beer fart.
Yeah, but she needed to be threatening and good to take Rhaegal down and capture Missandei so, you know, they could push Dany into being insane. Quote unquote. But it was just so bad that the next episode, the Golden Company was gone. If you, like, sneezed, you didn't see it happen.
Like, I literally didn't see it happen because I looked down to type something on my computer and I looked up, they were all already dead. True story.
What was the point? Why did they do that?
I don't know, because they needed someone to prompt this, like, change in Dany, so they kept her around longer than she needed to be.
Because, like, at the end of Last of the Starks, it kind of seemed like, oh, wow, they're actually screwed.
Yeah.
And then it was just a joke.
I mean, the fact that they were screwed in the first place is ridiculous because it all depends on all the military shenanigans in Season 7, which made no sense.
Dany, go to the Red Keep and eat Cheryl.
Yeah.
We can't keep saying
this. Yeah, that's what we were screaming all through Season 7. Why doesn't you just fly to the Red Keep, not burn anyone along the way, and just, like, eat Cheryl with their dragon? There's, like, really, like, because they had this entire dichotomy. about the choices are either do nothing or and or humanitarian siege. I don't know what that is. Or she has to burn down all of King's Landing and kill everyone. I mean, like, there's no possibility of, like, a surgical strike just on the castle. Like, you would kill some people, but not the entire city. Like,
I guess maybe Tyrion, like, had a magic eight ball, and those were the only options on it. Because, you know, it's a small die. So
yeah, that's true.
There's only, like, three or four unique options in a magic eight ball. Or, maybe better yet, it's a magic conch shell.
Magic conch shell. Okay.
Did you watch SpongeBob?
Not all of it.
Oh, that's a good one. Right. It's Club SpongeBob, I think, is the one I'm talking about, where he and Patrick try to, like, start a club. It doesn't matter. Go watch SpongeBob. It's a much better show than what we're talking about, and I mean that very seriously. Hey, while we're still on Dany, though, any idea about the whole I am not loved theme? That Northmen and Valemen do not like Targaryens is not strange. Had Dany gone to Dorne, it would be different. And we should not forget that Dany never met the small folk. Dragonstone is without small folk, and the Valyrian do not exist.
Are they saying that people in Dorne like Targs? What?
You sent this out. No, I'm kidding. People in Dorne do not like Targs.
That's not the point of this ask, but
But people in Dorne would utilize Targs to get rid of Lannisters for sure.
Yeah.
So I think actually they're accurate that there would have been a much warmer reception. Besides, Velaryon and her brood of bitches are all on Dany's team.
Yeah, they were.
So it really is stunning, though, that...
But the Starks were loyal to the Targaryens for 300 years, no exceptions.
Yeah, until so, Aerys.
Yeah. So, like, I'm not sure why she wouldn't be loved in the North.
I think what's absolutely amazing to me is that Dany didn't interact with the small folk in any way.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't...
Like, if she had an Alysanne-style women's thing or whatever they called those.
Her whole thing in the book, certainly, and even a little bit in the show, is how the people feel about her, how she'll be received, what kind of ruler she wants to be for them, you know, for the little guy. And
like, here it's just, like, people ignored her at a party once.
It's a Targaryen coming to Westeros, and no one reacts to it other than the lords.
Yeah.
We don't see that. We don't get that window. It's not about that. It's about how her military moves are going to work best. And it's just such a missed opportunity. And yeah, she was moody at one party.
And then she concluded that no one will ever love her.
Remember that time that Tormund climbed on a fucking dragon and rode it away because Dany came to save his dumb ass?
I mean, I thought that was all Jon Snow.
No, he was there! Dany landed her dragons and picked him up as if she was picking him up from school.
But Jon Snow is a man that people want to follow, Kylie, okay? He's a leader.
It makes sense. Even her being overlooked as a woman, the way they did it didn't make sense. How are they this bad at writing a show? But egg on our face, Julia, because the next ask about our assertion that it's ridiculous for Randall Tarly to be so hostile to wildlings. Is it so crazy for D&D to write that when A Feast for Crows has Lord Merryweather calling them savages and skins?
Well, Lord Merryweather, like, if I recall this scene correctly, this is the scene where Cersei is kind of comically ignoring all the real threats and, like, obsessing over fake ones.
Yeah.
And somebody mentions, like, how Jon, who is Lord Commander at this point, had, like, sent letters to everyone asking for help at the Wall. And Lord Merryweather just made an offhand comment. He was just like, wildlings aren't a real threat. They're savages in skins. Who cares? Let's move on. Let's have more wine. And
yeah, he was being dismissive.
Yeah. And Randall Tarly was more upset at the idea of his son shacking up with a wildling than he was at the idea of his son shacking up with a sex worker. And his reason for this is that they threatened the realm for hundreds of years. I think those are two very different things.
Yeah.
And also, like, this was more of a joke than a serious thing. So, from our end.
Yeah.
Like, Randall Tarly and his entire philosophy are kind of ridiculous on the show.
Yeah, so I actually just looked up the Feast for Crows context, and it's that Stannis is up at the Wall.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, he's trying to make common cause with the wildlings.
Okay.
And Lord Merryweather's like, ah, savages and skins. Lord Stannis must be desperate indeed to seek such allies.
Yeah.
We don't think it's ridiculous that Randall Tarly, who's a horrible asshole
yeah.
would hate wildlings. Of course he would.
I mean, it's ridiculous that he would even think about wildlings ever.
Exactly. He's a reach lord. Yeah. And his sole motivation on the show became that he was a wildling hater. To the point where they retconned him sending Sam to the Night's Watch to, you know, get rid of him.
Yeah, kill some bloody wildlings.
Yeah, now it's because he wanted him to kill some bloody wildlings. He's just Randall wildling hater Tarly because he talked to Lord Umber that one time. They both hated wildlings.
I mean, it would make, if Lord Umber's guiding motivation in life was that he hated wildlings, that would make perfect sense.
Yeah. Oh, we should probably address this at some point. What? But there was a documentary released the week after Game of Thrones ended. On
did anyone watch it?
I did not watch it.
I didn't watch it.
People did watch it. But I said, hey, I didn't watch this. Did anyone have any thoughts on it or anything?
Mm-hmm.
And Serviswa sent in an ask. The focus was mainly on the crew, the mm-hmm. managers, producers, FX artists, snow just equals wet paper mash, makeup department, and them dealing with the impossible schedule for season 8 and the hectic 51 night stretch of shooting episode 3. There is this joking inside the episode where they were like, yeah, most of that was waiting for Mel to get to her mark because she was walking so slowly. So, like, she took up all the 51. The main cast didn't make a ton of appearances apart from the meme fodder of the table read, which is great. It shows, like, Connelith Hill throwing the script. Plus, there's footage from the season 1 table read. Such a contrast. This was an independent project and, in my opinion, better at sparking an emotional response than the actual show. Also, Seville is beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, we have no problem with any of the crew. They did very good work most of the time.
Yeah, and speaking of Lindsay Ellis, mm-hmm. and we are big fans of her work. She did the Hobbit duology. It's a trilogy yeah. of videos, documentary on it. And she talks about how watching the behind the scenes stuff now versus how it was consuming the behind the scenes stuff on the extended Lord of the Rings DVDs. Mm-hmm. It just like makes her sad to see all this work go into this really mediocre project.
Yeah. I mean, that's how a lot of people feel about those Star Wars prequels too.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like, I was listening to the soundtrack. Like, I was listening to Padme and Anakin's love theme today.
Across the Stars? I used to fall asleep to it.
It is excellent. That relationship is not worthy of that piece.
John Williams is consistently excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, Duel of the Fates.
Yeah, for the worst movie ever made. Like,
it's just boring. It's just boring. Yeah.
Okay.
But thank you for Serviswa for that context. Yeah. It sounds nice. I don't think I'm gonna partake in viewing it unless I'm feeling particularly. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, I'm never gonna watch it. If I have that extra time, I will be working on Amos. I promise.
If I have that extra time, I'm gonna be like rewatching ContraPoints videos or something like that.
Okay. Know? I didn't do that all day. I did that all day while marking.
That wasn't a call out for you. I've been playing an MMO all day. It's okay.
I love ContraPoints.
Yes.
I love her so much. Do you think we can get her on the podcast?
Friends of the pod. All right. Here is a three-part anonymous.
Okay.
Allow me to... I'm just going to call it the Catty Women three-parter.
Okay.
So they really went overboard with Catty Women this season, didn't they? Episode 4 was probably the worst offender in that regard and overall. Apart from featuring the terrible... heard you were broken in rough line
God.
And rape made me smart. Sansa and Dany's interactions were so over the top irrational in that episode. For no particular reason, Dany just wouldn't take Sansa's quite reasonable suggestion to let her soldiers and wounded dragons have some rest.
Yeah.
Sansa's behavior at the feast was even more strange. Dany and Jon smile at each other, Sansa notices it, and then suddenly she storms off in disgust like some high school girl in a teenage drama movie. Seriously, what the hell was this? What in the world has to happen to make Sansa Stark unable to observe some basic decorum? If I recall correctly, David Nutter said that Sansa is acting like a jealous woman, and Dany's beauty factors into her behavior.
Because she's jealous of her brother.
Yeah, that's paraphrasing, but he did say that a little bit about episode 1, where he's like, yeah, Dany's really pretty. You gotta wonder how that factors in.
How could it factor in? Even if he's not literally her brother, he was raised as her brother, so even if she doesn't like his girlfriend, it's not gonna be because she's pretty.
Yeah, so the last part is actually, for a split second, I thought maybe John's shippers are right. No. Like, maybe she is in love with John. Why else is she acting like this? So openly hostile and snappy. To quote Tyrion, "You seem determined to dislike her." But as it turns out, David and Dan, and another D, David Nutter, just don't know how to properly write a political conflict between two women without making it about a man and each other's beauty.
Yeah, because, well, like, the thing I will say about Sansa this year is that all of her motivations, all of her acts were entirely political this year.
Yeah, and
like, she's all of a sudden, Northern independence was her hill to die on, which makes sense, but it kind of came out of nowhere. And
yeah, and it also, like, she was a lot more proper last year, as in the role and speaking the things she was supposed to be doing and what was meant for her to be doing in that context. She really broke decorum this season, and not in a good way. Like, she didn't do anything, really.
No, I mean, like, she was completely, like, screwed over by John.
Well, just, like, sure.
Yeah. I'm not sure, like, what she should have done, really.
I don't know.
What like, should in the she crypts, have done differently, though?
Remember in the crypts when she was just, like, bitching about
how
Danny?
They're all gonna die or whatever? Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, you know, Tyrion, if only it wasn't for Dany, you and I would have had the best marriage ever. And Dany's out there, like, using her dragons against the zombies that are attacking.
Well, that was like, about Northern independence.
Why was that the bug up her butt this year? What is that?
I don't know, but she's just like, you know, if Northern independence is going to be a thing, dude, we can't be married because you're into this other queen. I mean, that kind of makes sense.
I guess she just was really, really into the idea of a king or queen in the North. She threw her support behind John, as she would have done. Like, he's the king. Yeah. And then he kneeled, and she was just really mad at him.
But, like, until the last episode, she was still, like, John is our king.
No, in the last episode, too.
Yeah. She was. They came down to King's Landing to get John, basically, because he was their king. So.
She's like, I'm sorry, I couldn't give them their king back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I mean, I don't know where this came from.
Yeah.
That's her single focus, and she achieved her dream.
But the Anon is perfectly right about them not being able to frame this as anything but, like, a personal thing between these two women, when clearly it is not personal beyond, like, the fact that the king happens to be her brother. You know?
Well, the political is always personal, yeah. Julia.
No, but it's not that she personally dislikes Dany, even though she might personally dislike Dany, but that's, like, incidental.
I absolutely love the way that Chris reviews GOT, their Chris recaps GOT in, God, what was it? I think it was the second episode where it's that conversation just between Sansa and Dany.
Yeah.
And Sansa's, like, making a political point, and then Dany just goes, "Why don't you like me? Is it John?" Yeah.
He's like, no, I don't like you, because the only way I have of maintaining the loyalty of my lords is this whole Northern independence thing, and you fucked that up.
And the Vale, I guess.
And the Vale as well, and possibly the Riverlands? We're not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess the whole thing tasted so sour in my mouth for how Sansa was acting, because she was, like, doing the catty looks and all that stuff, and it felt beneath the character, almost. And then she ends up claiming that independence by seceding from her brother.
Yeah, that's confusing. I think I'm going to suspend most Sansa judgment from now on until we do the retrospective, because I don't think I have a clear view on it.
Yeah, I think I was just so disappointed that after her soup eating with Theon, everything went so downhill.
Okay, well, speaking of Sansa, according to Michelle Clapton, who is the costume designer, Sansa's coronation dress is a reference to both Margaery Tyrell and Catelyn Tully, which would be touching if we had seen Sansa remember them in any way, shape, or form. And also, didn't the show claim that Cat became a Stark after marrying Ned?
Well, if you had watched the teaser trailer with Sansa walking around the crypts, you would have heard her remembering Cat's line about how she's responsible for the downfall of the Starks because she couldn't love a motherless bastard, so...
That was in our runner-up list of specialist moments.
Oh my god. We missed a lot of moments.
Oh,
though.
We did.
Like, a lot.
But there were just so many. But, okay, well...
Did anyone react to Catelyn's death? I mean, Sansa cried.
Yeah.
When Tyrion found her.
You can argue that Littlefinger did. He kind of referenced it, I think, at one point.
Arya, I guess like the episode after the Red Wedding, Arya and Sansa both reacted to it. That's poorly worded, but I mean like mentions them again, other than Littlefinger, who always mentions
Well, in the Winterhell season, season 5, there's a bunch of like visual references to Catelyn.
Yeah. And, Sansa was like wearing her clothing.
Yeah, and she talks about her mother taught her how to sew, I think. Mm-hmm. But I think Not I think recently. Michelle Clapton remembers Catelyn Tully a lot more than the writers do.
I think that's a good bet. Yeah. Also, Marjorie Tyrell? What the fuck was Marjorie Tyrell to Sansa?
There was queer baiting. What?
Oh, right. Yeah. Here's a rose.
No, I mean, like, in the books, they had, like Marjorie's kind of, like, a last-ditch idealization.
Yeah. In the show, they were, like, besties for a little bit, and then she got to joke around with Tyrion after Marjorie gave her good sex advice.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate the show.
But I'm not sure how that dress was a reference to Marjorie Tyrell. Like, was it, like, super sexy with, like, a ridiculous neckline or bare back?
I guess just the way the weirwood was kind of, like, woven in, like, the leaves is evocative of the way she sort of had those, like, antlery thorn things going throughout her dress.
Okay.
That's my guess. I mean, I don't have that.
I'm just thinking of, like, Caroline and her pieces, just like, which craftsman would make this? What craftsman would have, like, a representation of thorns choking a stack?
I mean, Marjorie had burrito dress, yeah. And she was very fashion forward, so I don't know. I don't have that costume eye that Caroline has.
No.
But, yeah, kind of, it's one of those informed emotional punches that isn't actually there. Yeah. Oh, one moment that an anonymous claims we missed in our list.
They said that always gets overlooked. He did not say we missed it because we didn't.
Oh, I just assumed it was in the context of our list. But it was when Deadpan forced Prisoner to marry her and then had her boyfriend hold a knife to his throat in public for no reason.
We definitely did not miss his Darso Sansa.
Apparently they were never married. That didn't happen off screen.
Yeah, well, there seems to be conflicting evidence for that.
Or did it? You will never know.
I mean, like, there's like one throwaway line that Dario makes the next season that implies they were married, but yeah, it literally does not matter one bit, so who cares?
I forgot about Dario holding a knife to his throat.
Yeah,
oh, man.
That was just, but like, and like, they framed it all as this like concession that Dany was making, that she forced this prisoner to marry. Like, he was like literally on his knees begging for his life, and she was just like, thanks for the proposal.
You're on your knees. People get on their knees to propose in Westeros, right? Do you have a ring for me? It's okay. I'm wearing my mother's ring since season 1 that everyone knew about.
Yeah, but and they like the way they framed that character was so confusing to us. And like, our joke was that he had more in common with Sansa in the second book than he does with like any other character in the books. So we called him his Darso Sansa.
Oh my god. Fucking people proposing on this show is the funniest thing to me. Like, Gendry proposing to Arya, like, you're my forever girl.
Okay, so remember that charming story that Olenna told Marge at one point about how she was engaged to this Targ, but Targs were lame, and she wanted her sister's fiance, who was Papa Tyrell. And so she like snuck into his room on her way, like on her way to an embroidery lesson, and had sex with him. And then the next day he proposed, or he was supposed to propose to her sister the next day, but he proposed to her instead because she had sex with him, because that's how that whole thing works.
Did this like not have political consequences? Yeah, at all?
Like that's what women do in this quasi medieval setting. They like, you know, have sex with men, and they respect them so much that they marry them afterwards.
Well, and also, we arranged your marriage to a Targaryen, and you decided to fuck a Tyrell instead for that proposal.
Like, yeah, so I'm like, the Targs were okay with that? I didn't even
consider
that.
Did her sister
that.
Get shopped to the Targ after that? I mean, none of this makes any sense.
I mean, like, the thing that this is an analog for in the books, like, completely different.
Well, my favorite part of this, too, is that critics, after that story, like, posted these pictures of young Diana Rigg. And they're like, well, Olenna must have been quite the charmer in her day.
Of course she was.
I'm sure she was, but this is so stupid.
I can't believe it's not patriarchy. All right.
So there's been a lot of anti/pro Dany and Sansa stuff flying around since the last episode, particularly surrounding Sansa getting to be queen while Dany was murdered. I mean, okay. And that Sansa was chosen to be queen because she embodies the pure virginal woman men want. All I can think, both these characters in the books are actually so similar, but ultimately butchered by D&D, which is the cause of this infighting of who is the more deserving female character. Do you have any thoughts?
I'm not sure how similar they are in the books.
I don't find them very similar, but that aside, like...
I mean, if you have an argument for them being similar in the books, I'd love to hear it, but I don't really see it off the top of my head.
It's not striking me. Yeah. Not in personality, at any rate. Maybe a little bit in... what they're hoping to achieve, a sense of home, you know?
Maybe, yeah.
That's kind of the best I can think
that's
of.
That's true for, like, almost every character.
Yeah. A sense of identity. Yeah. They don't share that with anyone else. Well, they did purposely make Sansa a bit Elizabethan in her final look
yeah,
on the
it was,
show.
It was very...
pure.
Yeah, it was very Cate Blanchett in Elizabeth, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, like hair, like one of the funny things about the show, women frequently wear their hair down in the show, which is funny because that was like a sign of virginity back in the day.
I am glad that Sansa didn't make their list of like who else needs to arbitrarily have sex for the first time to knock that off.
She list. Already did that.
Oh,
she already
she
had sex for
rough.
The first time when she was broken in Ruth. Yes.
Oh God.
So they already checked that off. They did it already.
Right, because being raped is totally
the same thing. Yes, clearly.
It's so just I still cannot believe they had her be like, I'm glad that happened to me.
I mean, there's a way to like say that like my life experience was valuable and not say I'm glad I was raped, like, you know.
Yes, and the way to say that is not to have four idiot men write this line who have a documented history of issues writing women.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do about the most deserving female character, to be honest.
I mean, clearly the most deserving character in their mind is Arya. Clearly.
Yeah. But I will say the A Song of Ice and Fire fandom does have a problem with this sort of dialogue, mm-hmm. for sure.
And the virgin whore thing.
Yeah, and it's almost because there's so many, like, dude bros, sort of, in the fandom that are just championing male characters beyond everyone, that to even get them to take a female character seriously, mm-hmm. it's like you have to stand them to the end of their days and they do no wrong and
yeah.
all that.
Like, we've mentioned that several times. Just like, we don't even like Dany that much, but like, we've been having to defend her so vigorously lately.
Right, like it's like Captain Marvel. Yeah. She was fine. The movie was fine. I don't really think her character arc was there. But I don't want to say that. Well, it was her breaking out of conditioning. I just felt like it was more done to her than her doing anything. So it just didn't land for me that much. But I don't even want to say that because we have all these men on the internet saying she's like a villain because in a deleted scene that was deleted, she stole a motorcycle. So.
Well, clearly. It's like I find myself sometimes defending Outlander, which is a show I don't like that much because, like, people compare it to, like, cheap romance novels, which it clearly isn't. So, like, yeah.
I find myself defending cheap romance novels. So, we're going down a rabbit hole. They both wore it great. I don't actually think there was a lot of slut-shaming quality to Dany's writing.
No.
She was never... judged for her decision to have sex in any tangible way I can think, but she was definitely the woman spurned this season, and I think that's
weird. I mean, framing it like that is just so weird.
What was that?
Framing it like that is just so weird.
But that's what happened.
I know,
right?
It's just weird.
I mean, if only she had gotten the D from her nephew, it'd have all been fine.
I can't believe it's not incest taboo. Okay.
Arya Todd dropped out of murder school, and yet she became the best assassin ever, to the point of turning into Azor Ahai because she's just that awesome. Sam dropped out of maester school, and yet he is designated Grand Maester, and I think we're supposed to believe he deserves it. He did find the cure to grayscale. Is that what got him his one link? He had one link on
that. He read it in a book. He didn't even discover it.
Are D&D dropouts or what? Because I'm sensing a theme.
No, they're not dropouts. They have master's degrees.
They have MFAs in creative writing.
But you can argue they're severely anti-intellectualist.
But they definitely take aim at academia, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Sam's entire arc last year was like...
so much like grad school, yes.
Grad school's dumb. I mean, it's actually really funny.
Yeah, I mean, grad school is kind of dumb.
I was here for it when the dissertation popped back up as A Song of Ice and Fire in the final episode.
That makes no sense because his dissertation was about specifically the War of the Five Kings.
Sorry, it's not dissertation. It's a research paper he was doing in like a peer-reviewed journal.
Yes, whatever. But that was about the War of the Five Kings, which why would you call that A Song of Ice and Fire? It has nothing to do with that.
And why is the guy who is accused of murdering one of the kings not in it? what? But it is kind of funny. I mean, frankly, Arya should have dropped out of that school. They weren't teaching
her anything.
They're teaching her stick hitting.
Yeah.
But Sam ending up as Grandmaster with one link. Which I guess is in healing.
I guess.
It's just poetry, right? Because he's like not good with blood.
Yes, that's what poetry means.
Can you please read the highlighted?
They originally wanted Jorah to survive to the end of the show and accompany Jon and Tormund beyond the wall, because Jorah would have been totes cool with Jon after he killed Dany. But Dave Hill said it bent too much logic and that Jorah should have the noble death he craves defending the one he loves. They cared so much more about treating Jorah fairly than writing Dany like a human being. Laugh my ass off.
One thing that's interesting about this, though, like, everyone who says, oh my god, all of this is happening in the books, they had a plan to have Jorah survive, and then they changed it because they're like, nah.
No, just so, my, like, what I say to everyone who says that, like, oh, but they know what's going to happen in the book, so surely this is a book, like, this is just like the books, at least, like, you know, mostly. I say that, like, what they said at the end of season 5, when Ollie stabbed Jon, is that it was a book scene. They said it's basically a book scene. The season 5 begins and ends with a book scene. So,
and then they said it's season 6 that goes off a bit more.
Yeah, it goes off a bit.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Oh my god. D&D.
Yeah.
This is weird to me, though, because Jorah going north with Jon, I could see Jorah, like, I guess it could
be. And Dave Hill is our hero again. Dave Hill is the best writer in this bunch.
Because it bent too much logic. And, well, I do like him being kind of like, how would we get him there?
Yeah.
He's noble and has the death he craves, defending the woman he loves. Does he crave death?
Hashtag not all slavers.
Jorah craves death now.
Sure. I mean, show Jorah, maybe.
Whatever.
Like, show Jorah just, like, really wants to stand next to Dany, I think.
What a good, significant ending. But, like, him going north doesn't sound right to me either. I could see an ending where he takes the black, maybe, in the books I'm talking about.
Yeah, because his father...
Yeah, Jorah said that.
That was his, like, dying wish for Sam to tell Jorah that to take the black and redeem himself.
If only Sam had told him that after peeling the grayscale off.
Yeah, so in exchange for me saving your life, why don't you fulfill your father's dying wish? Upset in the show, all he does is kind of like grunt, so.
Remember when grayscale was a plot point for no reason?
Oh, God.
Why?
The pale mare.
Oh, my God. Why did they give it to him?
I wish the pale mare was like cholera or something, but whatever.
The pale mare is dysentery.
Okay. Yeah, okay, well, dysentery and cholera have very similar symptoms.
So. Oh, yeah. But why are you...
That you basically poop yourself to death.
They cut the pale mare out.
Yeah. But people were saying on the internet that the pale, like, grayscale is just like the pale mare. So.
Oh, funny. Yeah. Well, okay. Whatever they did on the show is not like anything.
No.
I was so baffled by that ending. I only just now realized two of the weirdest things. Show John basically pulled a Gregor, only instead of murdering children in front of their mother, he murdered a woman in front of her 8-year-old son. Okay. Also, D&D.
Drogon?
Yeah.
Is he 8?
Oh. Well, if years were seasons...
Then he would be 7, because he was born at the end of season 1. Yeah. But whatever.
Also, D&D made Danny pull a Shoshay so that we wouldn't linger on, oh, he just murdered someone who trusted and loved him, but wouldn't listen to agree in that particular moment. The third thing is, I guess no one gives a fuck about slaves anymore. Just leave them forever.
Okay. The show was never really able to pull off this whole the dragons are her children thing with me. So, how do you feel about that?
I mean, they kind of were like her pets.
Yeah. Just like the direwolves.
Yeah. I guess there just had to be some level of separation because there's CGI and there's constraints. And, you know, when she goes to pet them, you can kind of tell it's like she's petting a prop wrapped in green felt. Like, yeah, I get that. I would hesitate to call John a Gregor.
Yeah. That's...
He wasn't following orders and she just burnt down King's Landing.
Yeah, and he was totally crying, so.
I would say there's a little more reason to stab Danny than to stab, you know, Elia.
Yeah.
Slightly. Danny pulling a Shoshay is interesting, though.
Yeah, it seemed like a very random thing to do in that moment.
Remember when Shay tried to stab Tyrion?
Yep. And remember when she was on a first aid basis with Tywin Lannister? That's my favorite detail of that scene.
Tywin? Is that you?
Babe?
Honey buddy? Alright, you pick one.
Conspiracy theory. They purposely made season 8 unsatisfactory, putting it mildly, to everyone so that they can, that everyone will buy this stupid online game and other merch, I guess, to play themselves a better ending. Of course, that would somehow imply they're even trying before, so I see the holes.
I mean, I think that's a, like...
I mean, like, Barnes & Noble's is milking this by promoting the books and be like, you want another story? Read the books.
Think for the online game, though, tanking the ending was the best sales strategy. I would think that people who are satisfied with the ending...
Yeah.
You know, might have been more inclined to purchase that game. Because now it's like, oh my god, get this Game of Thrones shit out of my face.
Yeah, well, I've been feeling that way for about 5 years now.
I know, exactly. So, like, imagine someone who's just coming into it now, and it's over, and they're really mad about the ending, you know?
Yeah.
One question that we got, and actually I got this in a lot of different ways, and I just kind of want to address it, which is, did you hear what happened to Kit Harington? And he's, like, in rehab or facility or something like that, and...
I mean, exhaustion is usually a euphemism for rehab, right?
Yeah, I mean, I heard about it,
I don't want to speculate. They might actually just be exhausted, who knows?
Exactly, and, like, I don't think it's very healthy to be really, like, looking for details of the mental health of an actor. Like, let Kit Harington be.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Maybe he's taking some acting classes, who knows?
Maybe. Well, actually, there was a TMZ article in the news that was like, he gets 80 minutes of gym time at this rehab place, or 90 minutes. It's like, okay. I'm richer for this knowledge.
It's not enough time.
90 minutes, you can do a good workout. No more, no CrossFit stuff.
He probably does CrossFit.
I got this general question that I literally don't know how to answer, so maybe you can help me with that. Do you have any pop culture views that have changed in the past 5 years? Maybe as a sign of your growth or change as a person?
Maybe.
I would say I'm very, very different than 25-year-old Kylie.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, Joy has witnessed it. Like, I didn't know what a theme was this time 5 years ago.
That's true. Yeah, we learned a lot about, like, literary analysis and junk. I know so much more about intersectionality than I did. It kind of feels like I just, like, know about my own ignorance more than anything else. But compared to where I was 5 years ago, I definitely know a lot more about intersectionality.
Oh, for sure.
I'm and just turning and into privilege. A lefty? I don't know.
Were you not already?
I was, like, I always considered myself, like, a moderate, I guess.
I think I called myself a communist throughout high school.
Yeah, well, high school, who knows? I called myself all sorts of weird things in high school. But, I think, like, capitalism is the reason for all of the world's problems all of a sudden. It's kind of disturbing to me.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely have had views change in the past 5 years. I think it's impossible.
I'm just like, I'm thinking of it like pop culture views. Like,
yeah, because I'm going to say it's like almost impossible not to reflect a bit like, on privilege.
I didn't care at all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe 5 years ago, and now I kind of do. Like, is that a pop culture view?
But I just don't think it's even useful to separate out like political views from pop culture views that inform, you know, it goes hand in hand, right?
Yeah.
There's an exchange between the media we consume and what the society is saying. So like we're in the era of Trump now, you know, that's a markedly different feel to 5 years ago. And even in Canada, that is felt.
Oh, for sure. Everywhere.
So when you've got like Fuller House making jokes about, you know, the one of the little boys puts a line down the middle of the room because he wants to make his room great again. And, like, you have to consume that and be thinking about that and be thinking about how we use political satire and what it all means. I think it's impossible not to have views that have changed.
Yeah.
And probably changed in ways, like, it's not punctuated equilibrium. Julie and I have been evolving for 5 years and will continue to. But it's very hard to pinpoint what specifically has changed other than, like, I've softened on Thor Ragnarok since when I first watched it. Like, I don't know.
I've hardened on Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah. Harry Potter has gone downhill. I've actually hardened on A Song of Ice and Fire, I'll be honest.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very, very engaged with it in a lot of ways, but there's a lot of other ways where I'm like, you know what? It's kind of deeply flawed. We'll see what happens. I think you can engage with things that are flawed.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, if you could only engage with things that are not flawed, you would just be sitting in a dark room, so...
5 years ago, I was still processing whether or not I actually liked Game of Thrones or not. So that's a pop culture view that changed. Because season 4 would have, like, just ended or still been going on. Actually, I think exactly 5 years ago, I would have been in the middle of defending season 4 on forums.
Huh. 5 years ago, I was still on forums.
5 years ago, Kurosami hadn't happened yet.
Seriously?
Yeah. Oh, it was December of 2014.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Kurosami. Kurosami changed everything.
Kurosami changed everything. It made me a shipper. I wasn't a shipper 5 years ago. Well, yeah. I was. I was just kind of like a repressed
5 years
shipper.
Ago, we never heard of Steven Universe. I mean, Steven Universe was on TV, but I never heard of it.
It had barely started airing at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I didn't even crash and burn on Supergirl yet. There's so much that's changed.
Supergirl. You guys were so cute with that. I was, like, totally on the sidelines of Supergirl, but, like, Kylie and Gretchen and a couple of our other writers were, like, really into it, and then it just went, like,
no, there's literally 8 episodes I was into, and then season 2B came, and I'm like, nope, out, done. Have fun. Have fun, everyone.
Is that show still on?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Some people, like, really like it. I don't know, Lena Luth or something or other. I don't know.
Didn't she die? Thought I read that she died.
I don't think she died.
No, did she turn evil? Was she evil all along?
She was evil all along, and she burnt down.
She burnt down city Capital and, City, or whatever it's called.
And Kara had to stab her.
What's that city called?
I don't want it.
It's not Metropolis. It's the other one. It's L.A. To Metropolis is New York.
Republic City.
So it's something not, like that.
I don't know.
I forget. Oh my god.
I just want one to be called, like, Metro City or something like that. Like, these names are so bad.
Okay. Yeah. Are we done with that question?
I guess so. Chloe Frasers says, hey, I think I read ages ago that you listened to audiobooks of the series. I've misplaced my physical books after moving, and I don't want to buy them again. I was considering getting audiobooks. But the performance reviews are all negative and harshly critical. Not just with voices, but mispronouncing names, mixing up lines, painfully slow, etc. Did you enjoy the audiobooks, and would you recommend them?
Yes. I don't think that it's the best audiobook. Like, if there was, like, a competing audiobook performance that I could choose from, like in the Harry Potter audiobooks, you can choose between Jim Dale and Stephen Fry, I would definitely go with Stephen Fry. Like,
I would go for with Jim sure. Dale.
What?
Yep.
Oh, fuck you.
It's the ones I heard first. I just like them.
Well, he reads the American edition, and Stephen Fry reads the British edition, and the American edition just, like, sends me into, like, paroxysms. So, like, you don't have to explain what a lift is. It's clear from the context. Oh, my God. Anyway, but it's true There are mispronounced names. There are a lot of mispronounced names. Some of the voices are odd choices. Some of the voices are racist choices.
Oh, God. Given the scope of the books, Roy Dotrice does a good job. Are they slow? That's an audiobook for you. No one's reading it at the WPMs that Julia and I have going on here. You can listen to them usually at like 1.2 speed.
Yeah.
And I would recommend doing that. I think I do 1.1 for Roy Dotrice, because if I do faster than that, I honestly don't take it in very much.
I mean, like some of his mispronounced names are like legendary around here, like Brian and Pattire. I think I like Pattire better than Brian, to tell you the truth. Especially when he has like Lysa screaming it out during sex.
Oh God. Arianne's voice is bad. Yeah.
No, I've always skipped those chapters because I cannot stand his Arianne voice.
So I'll defend him just because of the enormity of the task.
Yeah.
I also happen to like audiobooks. I listen to them when I'm running. It's nice.
I mean, like, my Audible account, like, the only thing I've ever downloaded on Audible, it's, like, great courses, like, literally ever. So, I don't think I like audiobooks that much. But, I listen to podcasts when I run.
I guess, yes, I would recommend them if you have listened to other audiobooks and you like audiobooks as a medium.
Yeah.
If not, I might honestly buy them again. Box sets aren't like that bad now because Barnes & Noble is trying to push them on everyone.
Yep.
So it truly depends on what form you can consume books. I'm a fan of audiobooks. Roy Dotrice is special. I miss him. I'm sad that he's not going to be able to do Winds of Winter. Yeah. But
maybe his Arya. It's kind of like he forgot all the voices that he did for the characters like before he did A Dance with Dragons. So they're like entirely new and different.
Oh my God. Tyrion Scottish in that one?
I think they were trying to do like a Welsh thing with all the Westermen.
Which is weird because that should have been more Dorne.
Well,
but his Dorne was like.
Well, the Westerlands are in the West, so.
What was his? It was like, stay with me.
Yeah.
With his Arianne voice. Or like,
it's just like breathy and deep and it's terrible. I don't want to talk about it. Okay, so let's read this 4-power ask.
Wait. What's the best voice, though?
Other than Missandei in A Storm of Swords.
Oh, right.
His Cersei voice is fucking weird. I think he's trying to do a Welsh thing there.
I was thinking Mark Piper.
I mean, he's only in like one chapter, but he has this like it sounds like he's having an asthma attack.
And he's breathing in as he's talking. Yeah. I am for my son.
I mean, like, the character is described as, like, extremely overweight and, like, red-faced and apoplectic. Like, so maybe he is having an asthma attack this whole time. And it's Westeros, they don't have Ventolin.
It was a choice and he stuck to it.
Yeah. Okay. Because even his Arya voice is weird.
Yeah, like, I don't want
to. Oh, I have a hole in my heart is. Like, I can't do voices.
All right, any thoughts on Stephen King saying fans are just upset? Because the show is actually ending, no other reason.
Nope. No thoughts.
I also don't have any thoughts on Jason Alexander being like, I remember what it was like to be in a bad finale. I thought it was good.
I thought that finale was great. I mean, I'm talking about Seinfeld.
I liked the Seinfeld finale. It was thematic.
Yeah, I mean, it was perfectly appropriate to the show that it was in.
He didn't say it was bad. He said it was, like, poorly received.
Yeah.
Which it was.
Was it? It wasn't poorly received by me when I was, like, in grade 8. So.
Yeah, no, it was really poorly received. My mom hated it. I remember this very clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it really is the best way to end it. It's the most fitting way to end it.
We're still talking about Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Okay.
Obviously I'm not talking about Thrones.
I mean, the most fitting way to end it was talking about how Tyrion was walked into a brothel. I'm not going to argue with that.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's true. All right.
So this is a 4-part ask.
Have fun.
Okay. So, I stopped watching after 2 episodes of Season 5 because it got so bad that I just couldn't is capitalized, but stayed informed about the terrible list, mostly from your blog. Thanks. You're welcome.
You're welcome.
However, I decided to watch Season 8 and have gone back and rewatched the show almost in its entirety and only a few episodes left in 7. It seems to me, after seeing how it ends before seeing 6 and 7, that unfortunately the seeds for Dany becoming the Mad Queen were planted earlier than I'd like to give D&D credit for. Maybe I viewed the scene where she brings the calls differently, because I know how it ends, but it almost felt like her real decline started there, and season 7 was just a weird merciless, unfeeling shit show for Dany.
Yep.
But when she met Tyrion was really when her personality for me became the deadpan Dany. As much as I hate to think they planned this ahead this far, D&D really started to villainize her the second Tyrion entered the picture. They really set him up to be her foil as Saint Tyrion. He literally says that he's there to check her worst impulses, and I'm like, why the hell would anyone choose Tyrion for that? His whole life was made of worst impulses. Yet he was granted somewhat the ability to learn, whereas Dany simply went the path of tyrant because, I don't know, maybe creatively it made sense because D&D wanted it to happen. Yet each time she did something ruthless or merciless in Seven, it seemed in response to bad counsel from Tyrion himself, which led to significant loss.
Yep.
This is the last part. So basically, the show has Tyrion all but set up Dany to fail and lose everything, with every single one of his plans and plots resulting in catastrophic loss for Dany, from her allies in Westeros to her dragons to Missandei, to then have the gall to showcase him in the aftermath as being calm and rational and a good thinker trademark, while Dany is framed in a cold and unreasonable manner. I'm just appalled at how these writers could have possibly deliberately planned seeds for years for this.
Well, yes.
Yeah, like the
good summary. I will say, firstly, there is a difference between planting seeds or foreshadowing or whatever you want to call it, and actually getting the character to that point.
Yeah.
Like, you can say it's been loosely foreshadowed that, like, Bran will sit a throne in the books. Mm-hmm. It kind of, like, Weirwood throne, but it's kind of there. However, that you still have to do the heavy lifting, the legwork, to get him to that point. Ditto for the Velencar. The seed is there.
Yeah.
Was Jaime ready to strangle Cersei in a Storm of Swords? No. Or even in a Feast for Crows.
When he threw that letter that of her asking for help into the fire, he's getting there for sure, but...
No, not yet, yeah. I don't think. So, I do want to say that they have been writing to this endpoint for a while, yes. They knew the madness, quote-unquote, was going to come.
No, just the very good point that this Anon has made is about the way that she was written as a foil for Tyrion from the moment that he arrived.
It wasn't a foil for Tyrion.
It was a problem for Tyrion.
Yeah, it was what he had to overcome. Yeah. Remember Varys the NPC would like come and give him tasks?
Yeah. I was thinking about her burning the calls and the way that D&D spoke about that act. And, like, the way that I recall them framing it was talking about, like, how this is something that she did herself. She didn't need no man or no dragon.
Yeah, she was badass, yeah, is what they said.
And, like, they did not frame it as A, bad, B, unjustified, or C, like, especially even destructive, you know?
No, it was all positive. Yeah. And how they talked about it was all positive. Ditto for her moment where she hops on Drogon afterwards and is like, we're gonna go to Westeros! And then Disneyland. It's really after she gets back that then she has these impulses for Tyrion to be like, no, don't torch all of it.
Yeah, because like she's randomly all of a sudden being all like, I'm going to fly my dragons to like Astapor and burn the shit place to the ground. And he's like, no, don't.
I think what struck me the most about this ask is when you're like, who would nominate Tyrion as this like moral arbiter of truth?
I think that's book projection because show Tyrion has been the most cleverest man in the room the whole time.
Show Tyrion just killed Shay and his father for kind of no reason.
No, it's because of his man pain.
But it's simultaneously not as motivated. And, like, more... I don't know how to put it.
Do you think that the writers thought that was unmotivated?
No. I'm not saying
that. Yeah, so...
I think they thought it was straight out of the books, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I just mean there's such a stark contrast in, like, how Varys, in the season opener of season 5, puts Tyrion on his path towards Dany as, like, she has the right family name and needs you!
Yeah.
Versus, like, how Illyrio talked to him at all. Where basically don't even let him in on the plan.
Yeah.
They're just like, we think you'll be useful over here. Go have fun.
Yeah. And like all of like the beginning part of A Dance with Dragons is him piecing the whole Fagon conspiracy together.
Yes, exactly. It's not his amazing brain and moral compass alone will save the day. In fact, he's rather staunchly refusing to participate.
Yeah.
He has mushrooms and he's thinking about killing himself.
Yeah.
They're just mushrooms.
Maybe.
Maybe. But, yeah, I mean, you're 100% right that Tyrion... We just thought it was in the service of Saint Tyrion.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we came away with. But it was leading to this end where it's like, isn't Tyrion such a good guy for trying to control this awful woman?
We talked about this during the season. Like, you can't argue that her turn to Mad Queen Dany was completely unseated, but it did feel unearned. And I'm still not exactly sure why it felt unearned, but that seemed to have been, like, the universal reaction. So I don't think I'm crazy this time.
It's because she's ping-ponging back and forth between, like, these moments of really, like, sober niceness.
No, like, she's ping-ponging between, like, Obama and, like, an arsonist.
Yes. And she didn't... It's not just that she said, you know what, Cersei doesn't get the mercy of surrender. It's that she zigzagged on Drogon.
Like, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Like, it was clearly like, I'm gonna go to the castle and kill Cersei, but on the way I'm gonna burn the whole city for reasons?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, our problem with criticizing this show is that the plot often makes no sense, so, like, actually criticizing what happens is kind of impossible. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. You're adding more asks, you know? This is...
Because I just found two that we need to talk about.
Okay, well, we better do it quickly then.
As a Dorne stan yourself, what did you think of the Dornish prince?
I was so glad he didn't talk.
I was genuinely surprised Zandy remembered the existence of Dorne. Here's the thing. How could they miss the opportunity to present us with a princess for once? Dorne is the only place in Westeros where a woman can be heir by right, and they already wasted it without a bloody reason. Why not put a woman as the new ruler of Dorne? Why not give us Arya, you cowards?
She can even take her top off. It's canonical.
What if it was just, like, Arianne, and then there's just a tapestry in front of her? Just, like, on the stage.
I need to remind you that tapestry hiding is not actually canonical.
No. But it's in character.
Well, yes, that's...
We think.
Yes. We think we understand that character.
The answer is that D&D were never interested in the inheritance structure of Dorne. No. They cut it.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, they mentioned it in a DVD extra.
Cool.
Yeah.
That affected nothing. It was not in evidence in any respect. They gave us Trystane of all the fucking Martells to put in the show.
Like, their...
I'm sorry, not you, my little man.
Their, like, idea of, like, women being in a slightly less shitty position in the patriarchy is them being, like, sexually liberated. But sexually liberated in a very, like, male het way.
I guess they gave us Princess Velaria, though, right?
Sorry?
They gave us Princess Velaria.
Maybe. We're so confused. Like, what's her last name? We don't know.
What if she didn't have any, like, official authority whatsoever? Like, she was pledging all these Dornish troops, but actually she didn't have any reason to think
how
that they
lies
would
when men believe it lies.
Like, had Euron not attacked Yara's fleet, had they gotten to Dorne, that prince, that unnamed prince, would have just been like, no, you can't have my troops. Thank you. We're going to stay here. I just like him kind of looking at Sansa as she declares independence, like, I wonder if there's soup.
Yeah. I mean, as long as there's soup.
So this ask came from someone who I think has an angle. Speaking of Sansa, the teenager with no actual power, considering Bran still lives, telling her effective Grand Duke of an uncle to shut up. What were half the characters at the council even doing there with lords? Tyrion kinslaying quizzling of a foreign invader. Brienne, random wandering knight. Davos, Sam, oath-breaking maester trainee. Sansa, heir of an heir, etc. I know it's a minor point, but after four seasons of, oh, sit down, mace, and 20 good men, shit, it shatters immersion.
For that particular moment, yeah, I'm confused by that too.
When she told Edmure to sit down?
Yeah.
It's because it was once funny to make fun of Edmure, so they're going to make fun of Edmure again. That's all their thought process
I just
was.
Can't believe that they brought this, like, A-list actor back to do that.
I feel so bad for him, but at least now we know where Edmure's go.
Yeah, to Outlander.
I was excited to hear his stump speech. Like, I will say the teenager with no actual power, considering Bran still lives.
Teenager with no actual power who had the power to bring an army all the way down to King's Landing? You mean that one?
Yeah, I mean, she's very clearly the Lady of Winterfell because Bran said, I'm not Brandon Stark anymore. I'm not interested in being the Lord of Winterfell.
And even if she's only nominal, like, if she's not, like, you know, de jure the Lord of Winterfell, she controls the Northern Army. So,
That is actual power.
Yeah, with,
power
if anything, you say that Bran is the teenager with no actual power and possibly a title.
Also, how's he the Grand Duke?
I mean, like, one of the things that George Martin has said that he would do differently if he were to rewrite the series is that he would have a little more gradations with these titles. So it wouldn't be just Lord, King, and Prince. So
we're assuming the Riverlands are still under the North?
No, like he's just saying that like Lord Paramounts would maybe be Dukes instead of just like Lords. Just so there's like a difference between like, you know, that random like, you know, like Littlefinger's father was Lord of one castle in the Fingers, and he has the exact same title as like Emir, who's Lord of a giant kingdom. So,
but he's my lord. Yeah, I mean, I think it was a dumb moment for sure. Why Davos is there is absolutely.
I mean, he says that.
Yeah, he's even like, "What am I doing here?" Also, Howland Reed was there.
What? Yes. Howland Reed was there?
Yes, he's that random dude that none of us recognized, apparently. If you, like, zoom in, you can see the House Reed croc or something like that.
Okay.
How many men did the North break? Why were they allowed, like, 40 votes? Who is Brienne? What is Brienne doing there?
She's the Lady of Tarth, I guess.
And Sam is the Tarly representative? Was Tiffany, like, bored and...
Well, Tiffany has a lot of bedrooms to redecorate.
Sent Sam in her stead. And there's no Night's Watch, or there is a Night's Watch? Like, what oath did Sam break?
Well, I guess he hasn't taken Maester's oaths yet. He was just a student.
You don't have to take it until poop slopping 202.
No, you don't, like, you don't have to take it until, like, you've forged your chain and you, like, spend all night kneeling in front of the candle trying to light it with magic, right?
What I don't get is why Sansa, Arya, and Bran were all allowed votes up there.
Yeah.
That is some bullshit.
See, Arya definitely, I guess, like, Arya is such a big fucking hero that she gets a vote. I don't know.
I think she was just there as Sansa's bodyguard.
I think taking this scene seriously is a waste of time.
It's very much like the other pit scene.
Yeah, and nice toning on. I love it. Okay.
Well, you didn't see a lot of the ones that got deleted basically as soon as I got them.
Why? What do those say?
Oh, I just get some nasty ones. Mm. Like... Or just ones that are, like, very obviously, we're not going to agree, friends.
Are they all about Sansa?
No, but they are largely about Sansa.
You gotta send me some of these before you delete them. I get bored sometimes.
Yeah, some of them are, like, horrifying. I'll send you some of what I got.
Okay. All right, last Anon that we have. Do you have any favorite theories predicting Sansa's future in The Winds of Winter / A Dream of Spring? I find the idea of her reconciling with Tyrion revolting, and I think that if she's going to stay in the game, it will be using the tools she's picked up from its worst, as in most evil players, to protect vulnerable people rather than exploit them. I see her clearly becoming autonomous and not wanting to be property, and I think her destruction of Littlefinger would be in his exposure rather than his literal murder.
Well, I think his exposure is going to lead to his
I don't
murder.
Think those things can be separated.
Yeah, you can't be like, oh, he killed my aunt, but no big deal.
Send him to the wall.
NBD. I will say, I know we're not doing checklist Aspel right now, absolutely 100% out Aspel that she and Tyrion are, like, reminiscing fondly about their marriage.
Yeah.
I will say that right here. I think they could meet again. I don't think it will be like that.
Yeah.
She's not going to be calling him the best of them.
I mean, like, she doesn't really have a problem with Tyrion in the book, so she's just kind of like...
She tries to defend him to Lysa that one time.
Yeah, I mean, he's just kind of, like, projecting all these, like, things and expecting all this emotional labor from her, and she's just, like, not into it.
The marriage meant way more to him than to her. Yeah. To her, it was just something she kind of endured, because she didn't have a choice, because she was a prisoner. Theories about... her future.
I don't really have any. I mean, people do, but
Julia likes her ripping up the doll as the slaying the giant, so
I don't know, like, I kind of like that, like, you have this grandiose prophecy and it ends up just being something mundane. I like that idea. I'm not married to it or anything.
She's a really difficult character, I think, to predict. I don't know. I could see her going in a lot of directions.
Yeah, because she has a lot of political legitimacy tied in with her.
And Martin has had the most stressful answers about this character possible in all of Osso Spake Martins.
Yeah. He doesn't seem to be aware of the discourse about Sansa and
there's just so much hatred of this character.
Yeah. Yeah. But like where she is in the books right now, she's kind of set up to be like very powerful in the shadows.
Yeah.
And she's kind of in a position to like have a lot of like legitimacy tied to her for like three kingdoms. So
I'm very curious. I could see her ending up in a queen like position, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, her being queen of the North with a Stark on the throne doesn't make any sense. So I feel like it's so difficult to see what that path is going to look like right now to be able to determine, like, would her seat of power be the Vale? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of options, but speculation makes me break out.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's things that suggest that she's rather alienated from her northern identity.
And there's things that suggest other, she's not.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Okay. It's difficult. That was fun.
That was really fun. Well, thank you so much for sending all the asks. I mean, I'm going to do my best to keep answering as things come in, for sure. Like, that's not going away. And then Julia and I are likely going to do some hangouts and other podcasts. I'm hoping that we can get Beau on to talk about season 8 in some facet, if we could think of a way to do that, because he was unable to participate during the season, just with his work schedule.
Yeah.
But he was not happy.
Yeah.
Who was?
Nobody was. Like, I guess D&D were happy it's over and they could go work on Star Wars now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've been ready to move on with other projects for a really long time. And I have to think the actors are happy to be moving on, too.
Yeah.
This is a long year to be dedicating to one show.
Yeah.
A long year? A long time.
I mean, the 51-day shoot for season 3 sounds horrific.
That's Helm's Deep-esque, right?
Yeah.
Where they spent, two or three full months at night.
That's horrible.
And boy, you wasn't even it worth
see
it?
Anything.
Wasn't it worth it for that scene, that episode that has no rewatch value because the military plans were so stupid and it ended in such an anticlimactic way?
Yep. That's all their battles, really.
I was tense during the whole thing, but it's all gone. Like, I can't rewatch
remember
it.
When, like, John literally got everybody killed at the Battle of the Bastards and then his sister swooped in to save him at the last minute?
Remember when his sister could have told him about the Vale troops, though? It's like a cyclical argument.
Yeah.
Because we know that it was also D&D could make it shocking.
Yeah.
It's just...
Remember how Hard Home ended with him rowing away on a rowboat and, like, the Night's King, like, raising all the dead people by doing a giant Kauai shrug?
Including Carsey.
Including Carsey the Smurfette.
The best of all of them.
The best of all the Smurfettes.
Julia.
Yes, my love.
Season 8.
Uh-huh.
Do you have a highlight of highlights and a lowlight of lowlights?
I mean, the highlight of highlights is definitely the elephants.
It has to be the elephants. It's nothing.
The only thing I could think of that like I'm actually going to enjoy for the rest of my life is the elephants.
I think I had the most emotional reaction. I like scream laughed when Arya stabbed the Night King. Like I was okay.
I just don't have emotional reactions to anything in the show anymore.
I didn't think I did either.
No, like, I didn't even have a reaction to that. I was just like, okay, that happened. Now I have to write that stupid post-episode thing that we do after each live vlog. Great. And I'm out of tequila. That was my reaction to it.
Okay. I'm sorry. I
am low light of low lights. That scene where Emilia Clarke is not wearing concealer, so that's how you can tell that she's gone insane, is just, like, so lazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That party where she's sitting by herself in the corner.
It's hard. It's really hard for me to pick a Lily.
Yeah.
It's not... The bells is just so random.
Yeah.
It might be...
But it's kind of like Cheryl's Big Boom, you know? Like, it's random. Yeah. But, like, it's impossible to analyze because it's so random.
Same with Rhaegal's death, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, Missandei's execution, I think, might be my lowlight of lowlights because of just how cheap it is. Mm. And how D&D continually do this thing where they equate the existence of handcuffs to slavery. Like, they do this nonstop. So
how about how they had two Danish actors fight to the death, because why not?
Because they're Danish.
I mean, that's an unconfirmed rumor as far as I know, but it's so hilarious and so them.
Oh my god. I mean, the Euron final fight was just... I knew it was coming, and it was still like, why is this happening? Why are we watching this?
Oh, okay. We need to go.
We do need to go. Thank you so much for listening to us this whole time. We will have more content, both Game of Thrones focused and A Song of Ice and Fire focused. Yeah. I actually would kind of, if we could, like to do our Tyrion podcast next for A Dance with Dragons. So A Song of Ice and Fire content to come. There will be Game of Thrones stuff in the feed and also on thefandamentals.com.
Yep.
I really need to plan out my sexism in season 8 piece, don't I?
It's going to take you a while.
I'm just gesturing wildly to everything.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you so much for sticking it up for, oh god, almost 2 hours. What's wrong with us?
We love you all.
Thank you. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Dash activity.
I don't even know if it's still there.
That's my favorite. Of course it's still there. It doesn't just delete itself.
I know. Maybe it's not safe for work. Who knows?
Useful dash activity had some pretty racy content. Ollie nods at things.
Yeah.